We're here with Susan Simon, our regular correspondent.
Yes, and it's good we got Jake off the microphone because he was, like, going on forever there.
That's not true.
Jake's good.
Aw, thanks, Susan. See, they like me, Tom.
Yeah, they claim to anyway.
So, Susan, I know you have some special stuff to tell us this week, but I also want to know about your trip to Nantucket, land of our forefathers here in Hudson.
That's right.
Got a lot of sun?
I did.
I don't know.
I stayed out in the sun a little while, but this was a very short trip. This recent trip to Nantucket was very short. I just went for the book festival, which is very interesting because, you know, I'm so involved with the Hudson Book Festival. The Hudson Book Festival is a children's book festival, and it's one day. The book festival on Nantucket is a whole long 3-day event and is done. Nantucket, has a lot of resources that Hudson is gaining as time goes on.
But you mean famous authors?
Well, they have the resources to bring all those people there. They have the carrot that pulls the people in. The authors don't get paid any more than they get paid when they come here, which is nothing for the most part.
Just like our lovely radio station.
They just they just get to stay at the White Elephant on the harbor, and they get to go to dinner in wonderful places.
That's what we should get here.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's happening in Hudson. That Hudson's becoming a draw for the authors too. I mean, these authors are getting a mini vacation for their appearance, and they are, you know, pretty fantastic authors. One of whom I snagged to come to the Hudson Children's Book Festival in 2017. Who is an author, a children's book author called Jack Gantos, who writes children's books and young adult books, that I know was on Lisa Dolan's wish list, and happy to have made that connection. I was there.
Who were some of the other writers?
Some of the other writers were Sebastian Younger, Arlen James, Alice Hoffman, Diane Ackerman, and who I fell madly in love with was Billy Collins.
I can't stand him.
You can't stand him?
I think he's the worst poet in the world, frankly.
I think he's funny, and I think he's witty.
He is funny. He's a comedian. He's not a poet.
You know, he's very witty, and he did the opening night talk with Mark Doty. Do you know his poetry?
Yes.
And same thing?
Yeah, it's okay.
You're a more serious guy.
Billy Collins, someone once said he's the perfect poet for he writes for people who hate poetry.
That's right.
That would my kind of poet.
not that hate poet. It's like an introduction to poetry for me, because I'm not.
Yeah, I get it.
You get it?
Yeah.
And he was pretty.
He knows how to entertain. There's no doubt about that.
He knows how to entertain. He's you know, he spoke 3 different times during the 3-day weekend. And the last day was the breakfast at the White Elephant Sunday morning, and, you know, looking over the harbor and boats sailing in and out was very beautiful. And he asked for questions afterwards, and I asked him a question. I asked him if he thought that New Yorkers were funnier than anybody else, because he is a New Yorker. He's a native New Yorker. Mm-hmm. He's not the Jewish comedian kind of New Yorker that we think of when you think of Woody
Irish
Allen
comedian.
And Mel Brooks, but he is.
He's an Irish comedian.
He's an Irish comedian. Mm-hmm. He's got...
One of those guys, you know, Dennis Leary and all those types of George Carlin. All that kind of...
But it is. He said, you know, and he thought about it for a minute and said, yeah, we are. If not, we would be weeping. But, you know, I enjoyed him
Marlon James, I read his new novel. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, he was the only dark face there, unfortunately. That's the thing with Nantucket. Not too diverse. Who else? Well, one of the reasons I went, besides wanting to see the book festival, and it was the book festival on Nantucket was started by a very good friend of mine, was that Michael Ruhlman was there. Did I talk about Michael Ruhlman the last time?
The Making of a Chef guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I had interviewed him. When I found out that he was going to be there, I took advantage of the fact that I was in New York City, and I just wrote to him and said, can I interview for the Nantucket paper? And he said, yeah. So I got a chance to interview him, and then my friend on Nantucket said, would you like to help us out? Because he was doing a signing and a demonstration at the new Culinary Center on Nantucket. See, this is what Nantucket has. Nantucket has Wendy Schmidt, who is Mrs. Google, Eric Schmidt's wife, who's decided to remake Nantucket in her own image, but to pour millions and millions of dollars into downtown Nantucket, to make the downtown a place that the...
Gee, sounds what I just exactly what I wouldn't want to happen here in Hudson.
You wouldn't want it to happen, but, you know...
I was about to ask, is this a good thing or a bad thing for Nantucket?
Well, it's, you know, I was reminded recently, there was just an article in one of the Nantucket magazines about Walter Beinecke, who was the person that really started Nantucket. It brought it out of its demise in the early 60s, because Nantucket had just become like a day trip kind of place from the Cape, and it was falling apart. You know, Nantucket had its heyday in the days of whaling, and then it declined with... You know, when whale oil was of no use to anybody anymore, when petroleum was discovered. So it's, you know, it sort of vacillated between a summer resort for very wealthy people from Boston and New York to, you know, almost nothing, you know, a small fishing industry. And, you know, Walter Beinecke, you made this deal with the town of Nantucket and bought the entire marina, down the marina, and turned it from just a place where fishing boats came in to a world-class resort. Bought, you know, re-renovated some of the hotels, just brought it into the 20th century, which a lot of people, you know, there are bumper stickers all over the island at the time, because I was going to Nantucket pre-Walter Beinecke, no man is an island kind of thing. But the point is that, you know, for good or for bad, boosted the economy on Nantucket. You know, what Wendy Schmidt is doing is, because this economy was so boosted, the downtown of Nantucket became, which is what could happen in Hudson, because we watched this happen, the downtown became a place where local businesses could no longer do businesses because the rents got too high, Warren Street. So what happened is the main street of Nantucket became real estate offices, T-shirt shops.
Oh, no.
A couple of jewelry stores. And then, so everything went to Mid-Island. You know, the drug stores, the supermarket, all the things that islanders needed year-round. And they had no use for coming to downtown Nantucket anymore. So what Mandy Smith's idea was, with her organization, which is called Remain Nantucket, REMAIN, from Main Street, was to bring things to downtown Nantucket that would make it a palatable place for Nantucketers to come again. And she started it off by establishing a bus system that brought people from all over the island to downtown. And then she opened a music school, and then she opened she bought the two bookstores that were about the two independent bookstores that were about to go out of business. And then she did many things, but the latest thing that she's done is this culinary center, which was, she put $22 million into making this amazing state-of-the-art culinary center where there could be cooking demonstrations and dinners and everything else. And this is where Michael Roman did his demo. Yes, Michael Roman is the most prolific, least-known food writer out there. I mean, his claim to fame was Soul of a Chef.
Oh.
Which about the, you know, the Culinary Institute, the making of a chef, about his time at the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park. But he's also been the author on all of Thomas Keller's books, The French Laundry, Bouchon, written Eric Ripert's books. He's working on a book with Jean Georges now. Plus, you know, his own books. So I helped out with that, too. I helped out with his cooking demonstration, and that I made some hors, because he wanted people to eat while he was doing his demo. So I...
So you helped him out and
No,
ate?
I made some hors d'oeuvre that I kind of created out of one of his books. So, yes, it was a good time, but here we are. Here we are today on the first day of Eid. I think that's the way you pronounce it. Is that correct, Tom?
E-I-D?
Yeah.
I do not know.
Eid al-Fitr. Which is the
first day after Ramadan.
The first day after Ramadan. Uh-huh. It's a big celebration in the Muslim world. It's a big celebration like some of our big celebrations are Christmas,
New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve. It's you know, that celebrates the end of a month of fasting.
Right.
And you were right when I said to you, it's also called the Festival of Sugar, because there are a lot of sweet things that people eat as they break the month-long fast. They don't fast for a month. They fast during the days of a month, and then they eat at night. They eat in the morning. They break the fast with a date. And you said, I knew dates were going to be involved.
Somehow I did. I don't know how I knew that. Middle East, they use fruit, put fruit in a lot of things.
But it's not just the Middle East. You know, Muslims are not just in the Middle East. Muslims are all over the world. One of the largest Muslim populations in the world is in Malaysia.
That's right. The Far East has many
Muslims. Of India. So there are Muslims all over the world. So each of these cultures are celebrating this day with their own kinds of, but sweet things are involved, and sweet things that are native to those countries. I mean, there's not a lot.
Right.
So dates are big. These are warm countries, so dates are big. This thing that we're aware of Middle Eastern food, I think, because there are Middle Eastern restaurants around.
Right.
Were you about to say something, Tom? And I just kept blabbing
on and on.
I went to the great source of everything, you know, the Oz of all information. Google.
I was going to say.
Speaking of.
Wikipedia.
Well, actually Google, because there are a lot of entries for food that's eaten on Eid. And there was one entry that sort of went around all the countries where there are Muslim populations. And they're all kind of similar in a way. A lot of them involve certain kinds of dough, honey, seeds, nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did Yemen. There's a sweet dough there's honey drizzled on it and nigella seeds sprinkled over. Do you know nigella seeds?
I don't.
Those are tiny little black seeds that you sometimes see in rye bread.
Huh.
Do they come from Nigella Lawson?
They come from Nigella. She comes from nigella seed. in Russia and Turkey, not necessarily sweet, but these manti, which are little dumplings that look like ravioli. But they're stuffed with lamb and lots of spices, so they can be kind of sweet. And the big thing about...
It is pronounced Eid.
Eid?
According to, what's the source here? Webster.
Webster.
Yes. Just thought I'd interrupt you with that bit of information.
No, that's good. And al-fitr, it's spelled F-I-T-R. Is that fitr? Fitr?
I guess I'll look that up now.
Okay.
What's the word?
A-L-F-I-T-R.
Okay. It probably is al-fitr. Was that right there?
Fitr.
Oh, yeah, there it is. You don't... You're quick, kid.
So the manti are these ravioli, but they're served in copious amounts of brown butter.
Oh, my.
And in Turkey...
I thought you were going to say honey.
No, in Turkey, they take the brown butter, and to make it even creamier, they put a dollop of really thick yogurt in it, which adds a tartness to the sauce, which is really nice. In the Sudan, there's a sweet dish made with wheat and honey, and these are the things that are just native. They're there on the land. I mean, there's lots of honey in Africa. India, there's similar to what they do in the Middle East. They make a kind of a noodle pudding and put nuts in it, and these noodle puddings are sweetened with dates or with raisins and spice, you know, lots of very fragrant floral spices like cardamom and cinnamon.
Do they eat other things besides these?
Oh, yeah, they eat other things. I mean, you know, there's a huge feast that goes on, but they break the feast, interestingly, with something sweet. I mean, there are all over the world. The feast involves lots and lots of dishes, stews and curries, special stews and curries, a biryani, which is like an Indian stew that has vegetables and rice, and make it with rose water sometimes, but it's all very special ingredients. Egypt, milk and dates are what sustain people in the desert. You know, camel milk and dates. This is what the Bedouins survive on.
It doesn't sound like the best diet.
I've never had camel. Have you?
No.
No.
Have you ever ridden on a camel?
I've sat on a camel.
You ever smoked a camel?
Yes.
There you go, Ellen. Syria, semolina pudding with cinnamon and pistachios, Afghanistan, lots of stuffed flatbreads, which is not necessarily sweet, but they put various kinds of vegetables in the meats. So it's, you know, every one of these cultures where there's a large population of Muslims has their own rituals, but its first in starring Sweet Things.
Sounds delicious.
Delicious. Yes. So, yes. Then and Ramadan is a whole, this festival of fasting is all about Allah and the memory of Allah and that's what it's about.
Thank you.
So there we go. This starts at sundown tonight, and that's what's going on. And then I wanted to just talk about what's in season here in our town of Hudson, if we have time.
Sure.
We do have time.
We do?
Sure.
Talking about Sweet Things.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, they are some delicious sweet shelling peas and sugar snap peas.
Oh, I bought some in the market last week.
And?
They're wonderful.
What did you do with them?
I steamed them. I ate them raw. I put them in salads.
What you're talking about both the sweet peas and the sugar snaps or just sugar snaps?
Sugar snaps.
Sugar snaps.
Yeah.
Well, I've been buying both.
Mm-hmm.
And as you may or may not know, I do not write for the Register Star anymore.
I didn't know that.
Because I read it. I can say this on the air, because they don't have any money.
It happens.
So, I mean, I can't do a food column for no monies. But I still write a weekly column for the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror,
uh-huh.
which is a very nice newspaper. And it's a weekly, which I think that there should
be. Can you read it online?
Not unless you subscribe. That's
well,
so smart.
Tell me this. Is your blog still in existence?
No.
Perhaps you'll rev it up again.
Perhaps I'll revisit that
column on it.
Yes, but I'm just working on a column for the Nantucket Inquirer and Mirror about peas and sugar snaps, and there are so many things to do with peas. And one of the recipes that I tested yesterday is a kind of room temperature version of a classic Venetian dish, which is called Risi e Bisi. You had Risi e Bisi, mm-hmm. Tom? He's shaking his head. Yes.
Is that like easy peasy?
No, it's really like a sweet pea risotto.
Right.
Say it again.
Risi e Bisi.
And Bisi. Okay.
Rice and peas.
Right.
So, but it involves standing over the stove and, well, anything, you got to cook rice. Mm. So this is like making a risotto and making the broth and, you know, adding it slowly and da 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 da. And it's delicious. So I kind of deconstructed it and turned it into a room temperature salad, and then I just cooked the rice straight and I steamed the peas and then I sauteed them in bacon, which they use pancetta in Risi e Bisi, bacon and a little bit of olive oil, shallots, and finished it with a dollop of yogurt to make it tart because the peas are so sweet. And then just added the steamed peas to that sauté, and then just tossed it all with the rice. And put a lot of freshly chopped mint into it.
Mm.
Peas and mint.
Did you bring the leftovers with you?
I should have, because I had a lot of leftovers. I took it for the photograph. And I made it for the photograph. But then there are things, you know, I've been making with the peas, like insalata russa, or salad russe, which is kind of a staple at... Italian deli. I mean, in Italy, an Italian deli.
Is it mayonnaise and?
Yeah, it's mayonnaise with peas, carrots, potatoes. It's
corn, maybe.
No, corn is not a big ingredient in Italy. Or, but something sour. You have to put something like cornichon. Okay. So I made one last week with, stuff that I found at the green market. I put peas. Didn't put carrots. I put golden beets, steamed golden beets, cubed, new potatoes. Thinly sliced fennel celery, because there was fresh Columbia County celery at the market. And then I made a lemon caper mayonnaise, fresh mayonnaise with, fresh egg. Oh, it's delicious. And then, I have a photograph somewhere. And then...
I'm getting weak listening to all of this food.
So good. But there are things to do with sweet peas, like you know how those wasabi peas, if you ever had wasabi peas, which are so delicious?
Mm-hmm.
Well, take fresh peas that you get here and roast them with spices on it. And then let them, cool off and have that with a cocktail. An Aperol Spritz, for example. Which is my favorite drink right now.
A what?
An Aperol Spritz.
Aperol and Club, I mean, club soda.
Uh-huh. And Prosecco.
And a little Prosecco. Oh.
Prosecco, Aperol Prosecco and a float of club soda.
There you go.
Nice.
Lots of ice. Delicious right now. Refreshing. Wonderful. With some spicy and sweet freshly roasted peas. What else have I been? And then you can take peas and you know, and steam them and then rub them through a sieve and make a pea puree with some curry spices in them and some garlic, and you know, use as a spread on crostini for a nice cocktail snack. Pea soup.
I think it's time for a cookbook to be written.
You
with
do?
All of these delicious sounding
things. There are
things.
So many. Now that I'm, you know, on this list, I get cookbooks sent to me.
Yeah, the pea book.
The pea book?
Or maybe a book of pee.
Book of pee.
The book of pee. There's no good way to handle this.
I knew
There's
that.
So
that's
many cookbooks out there. There are more cookbooks than ever before. And they're all like people that are
easy,
decades
peasy.
Younger than I am. They all have blogs that have 50,000 followers. It's not easy.
Discouraging.
Well, it's discouraging, but I should like get past it. I mean, I'm just reading about Norman Lear, who is like 93 years old and still doing stuff, you know, still making television programs, and says, you know, there's a whole generation that's his age out there that, you know, they need programming too.
They should step aside.
Step aside.
For young people.
Ageist, Tom.
Step aside. I've stepped aside already.
You've stepped aside. You're too young to step aside.
Yeah.
What's Jake raising his hand?
Step aside for me.
You have to say that into the mic, Jake.
He stepped aside for me.
Now, why did he do that?
Because, you know, I support youth. I support the youth.
Yeah, support the youth, but the youth don't know everything.
Oh, that's clear. They know barely anything.
They know a whole different set of things than
they
know.
No, they don't.
Some things they know
that
are different.
They're just
not
dumbest people I've ever encountered.
They're just telling the same story in a different way.
That's right.
Really?
I think
they discovered peanut butter. Sorry.
Well, that's one thing.
I think you should call your cookbook Easy Peasy.
Easy Peasy? My gosh, I just got a new cookbook in the mail called Small Victories, written by an author called Julia Tershin, who seems to live up here somewhere. Said she lives in upstate, of course, she lives in upstate New York, moved here from Brooklyn, lives in upstate New York, has been a private chef, has co-authored, you know, cookbooks with more famous people.
I don't believe all these people say they've been private chefs, you know, for like, and they'll never tell you who they've been a private chef.
Well, it seems like from the.
I think they're all full. Peas.
Well, to look at the some of the quotes in the back of her book, I would say Sally Field was a private client. Gwyneth Paltrow was a private client.
Oh, in that case.
First cookbook, I got a nice quote from Susan Sarandon, who was one of my catering customers.
Uh-huh.
Different.
That's different?
Well, catering customer, yeah. I mean, because that means you had all different customers. But these people who are like private chefs, I keep meaning private chefs. To celebrities they'll not name.
She
not that I care about the celebrity. It's just like, who are you kidding? And how do I know that person even likes decent food? They might be telling you to make, you know, pork and beans every night.
And yeah, and you can do that well or not. Is the sun coming out? There's nice little
sun will come out tomorrow.
There's nice little music sun going on in Catskill tonight. Well, did you talk about that?
The what?
Music in Catskill tonight.
Well, we will if we get
the
time.
If you ever get
music
ever get
in Catskill tonight. What's the music in Catskill tonight?
Society of Flying. Do you know them?
Oh, no. I don't know them.
I think they're...
It's not in your list?
No.
I think
I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because...
You don't like them.
That's not true.
Censorship.
There's a lot going on in Catskill these days, but there's a lot going on here in Columbia County, and it's all I can do to handle.
Oh, gosh, all your list this week. My goodness.
Well, speaking of people should step aside. Oops, sorry. No,
we have to step aside pretty soon for the news.
There you go. That's what I meant.
But that's the only reason.
Does Tom like giving me this huge hint? I haven't been here in a few months. I got lots to say. But
yeah,
I can
that's
finish
right.
up.
But I love these pea recipes. They sound great.
Yeah. And sugar snap peas. Sugar snap peas are so sweet, they want a really spicy dressing, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to dress them with mustard oil.
I have bad news, like the Register Star.
What?
We no longer can pay you.
So, okay, I'm going to leave. You want me to leave now? Yeah. Is that the hint? All right.
That's a joke, folks. Everybody
right,
here.
I'm going to leave soon, but I'm going to go to Nantucket for 2 weeks. I'll come back and tell you what I ate this summer on Nantucket.
Okay, but I do want to say one thing that's food-related. Yes. Marcella Hazan, I think, who is like the godmother of Italian cooking or something.
In America.
To a lot of people. Yeah, in America. Died recently, didn't she?
A couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that. But anyway. I thought it was just yesterday.
It seems like yesterday. That's all.
There are two recipes from her cookbook, her standard
pasta recipes Bible. With peas.
I don't know about that. Oh.
Tomato sauce.
The tomato sauce was the number one recipe that people use.
Yes.
I don't know how they know this. But continues to be absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it's a delicious recipe.
And it's basically a can of tomatoes, or you can use fresh.
The can is better.
Big can. A cut onion, an onion cut in half, peeled and cut in half. Use half the onion and 5 tablespoons of butter.
What's wrong with that?
What could be bad? Yeah. So I was describing this to Billy Letta at the Italian food market here, and he said, oh, that's French. That's not Italian. French use butter. Mm. Italians use olive oil.
Unless you like Marcella, you come from the north of Italy.
Right.
Aha, that explains it.
Yeah.
But that sauce is really good.
That sauce is delicious. You're
and
absolutely right.
Billy himself is going to bottle his sauce and sell it. And
his sauce is good.
His sauce is wonderful.
It is very good.
And does he let you know what's in it?
He told me once, and it was very, very simple. He uses canned tomatoes, too, I think.
No, I've talked to, Gabby at Bonfiglio about this. Because I think that the sauce that he makes is delicious, too, which has so much olive oil in it. It's almost like a confit. He really believes that canned tomatoes are best for sauce. I do, too. I think fresh tomatoes are delicious and are good for salads.
Mm-hmm.
Canned tomatoes, I mean, Gabby's thing is that they're sitting in that can and they have a chance to, develop all their sugars, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Just one more thing, and I ask if you would be interested before the news. One more person who's at the Nantucket Book Festival, of course, because he's an islander. I just spoke on WAMC last week, or a couple of days ago I heard him, is Nat Philbrick, who's an historian and has a new book out about Washington and Benedict Arnold and their battles here in Albany and Saratoga. I had this idea that it might be nice to ask Nat if he would come here and talk to a Hudson historian.
Oh, you're on a first-name basis,
He kind of helped me with some of my Nantucket
books. I'd like his book on Moby Dick.
Heart of the Sea.
Yeah.
Is there a Hudson historian you think who could be in good conversation with him and have a 92nd Street Y kind of forum that people could come to and there would be a conversation about the shared history?
We could find one. Yes.
Could?
I think
yes?
so.
Okay.
That just would be great.
Just wanted to ask that publicly. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Till the next time.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to Susan Simon, of course, the blogger. The sometime blogger.
No longer blogger, Ellen. No longer a registered star.
And woman about town.
But still in the Nantucket, what's it called?
Inquirer and Mirror.
Inquirer and Mirror.
Yes. Can be seen there.
Yes.
Can you see it online there?
You can see it online if you subscribe. Yeah. I mean, it's a weekly paper, and that's what they should do here. Have a weekly paper, and then everybody would buy it.
Well, we do have a weekly paper called...
A county paper.
Yeah, it's a county paper.
What if just imagine here, the Inquirer Mirror. Everyone would buy it because it would be the police blog. There would be local news, local sports, a gardening column, a food column, a decorating column. But just once a week, and everybody would buy it, and they get great advertising.
Well, maybe Ellen could underwrite that.
Sure.
That's my opinion.
Thank you, Susan.
Bye.
We'll
Bye,
see
Susan.
You soon.
Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.